Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm a feminist, but I've told everyone I've met today, from barista to pilot, I'm very hungover and expected them to look after me. Do you know what? They pretty much all did. I flew from Ireland and people were like, oh, it's awful, isn't it? I went, yes, thank you. Can I have a banana, please?
I'm a feminist, but the other day I looked at an article that I'd seen on Twitter being mocked by a feminist just to see how awful it was, called How to Get a Happy Summer Vagina in Teen Vogue. And actually, I found it very helpful. It wasn't as risible as you'd think.
No,
I sort of thought,
oh
my
health.
God. Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
I love
Teen Vogue.
And do you know? You know when your mother would say, get out of that wet bathing suit because you shouldn't be running around. She was right. You thought she was being a boring fun killer. No, no, no.
She was being a fungus killer.
That is correct. No, you mustn't stay in your wet bathing suit because it can have serious lifelong ramifications. Also, beware of sunburn on the vagina.
And doing handstands while sunbathing, clearly.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. Beware of that.
I'm a feminist, but I'm so keen for approval that when I took a urine sample into my doctor last week, I said, is that an okay colour? Even though it was obviously a fabulous colour. It was practically Evian. And I thought, if you're not going to pay me a compliment, I'm going to make one happen.
Thank you. I'm a feminist, but my mother once told me that when she was a young woman going to a very glamorous old Australian cinema on dates, at the end of a sad film, they would lift the lights only a little bit so that the ladies had time to adjust their makeup in the dim, and so that when the lights were fully up, they looked completely collected and demure and suitable for their date. And a little piece of me wants that back. little piece of me does. I just love the idea. I love the idea. It's so civilised, isn't it? I mean, it's so glorious that you get just a little moment. And also, in this fantasy, I have a sort of silver compact. I'm not rooting around in the bottom of a bag that has sort of chocolate wrappers and brisket crumbs and half a lipstick that's fallen off. No, I have... My mother had a velvet clutch when I was a little girl that she used to take out with mother of pearl, little handle on it. And she opened it up.
She sounds like an absolute fucking lady, your mother.
I mean, I wouldn't describe her as an absolute fucking lady to her face, but she is. She wouldn't like that at all. She'd have to adjust her makeup quite a lot after that.
Dim the lights.
This is the time when women wanted to look like grown-ups. And now the only question is, how long can I sustain the look of a 14-year-old? Why don't we want to be out in a sort of black velvet gown with a long cigarette holder, a bit ready for my close-up, like in the montage?
Yeah.
Oh, if you've joined the podcast, if you're listening at home, there's a montage. If you just pause this now and you go to the show notes, there's a YouTube link. Watch that, because that's important context.
Was Tallulah Bankhead in that montage?
Tom?
No, okay. Thought I saw her, but was just being... Gotcha.
I love Tallulah Bankhead, though. She is... In fact, I wrote a book called The Guilty Feminist, which is coming out in September. Please order it now from Waterstones. There's a whole section, because I have different... my favourite Guilty Feminists from history in it, throughout it. And my favourite ever is Tallulah Bankhead. Yes, who you played
in a film. I played in a film, yes. And I never really nailed the accent or the confidence. I'll be honest.
Why are you saying that?
Well, I was going up... I've got to go sweep up the stairs. It's in Florence Foster Jenkins. And I got to sweep up the stairs all sexy and all like... And there was a lady behind me who at one point said, you've got to make an ooh with your mouth as if you're sucking a cock. And it really threw me.
I understand.
I was gone for the rest of the day.
I understand.
It would
why.
Be such a thin little cock. Like a little spaghetti willy. I mean, Tallulah Bankhead wouldn't... Wouldn't be messing about with that.
No.
I'm a feminist, but I sit very quietly, even though I'm bored, and I let men talk about sport because I think it's somehow good for them in terms of, like, communicating and expressing themselves and, like... And I always thought it was a really nice thing to do, and it was only today I found myself doing it to my partner and father-in-law, and I thought, they're not monkeys. Like, they're fine. They are absolutely fine expressing their feelings. One of them cries at adverts all the time. You can guess which one. And I don't know where I got that idea in my head that, like, let them have a little... It's good for them. It's good.
It's good for them to have an outlet for their emotions.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I'm a feminist, but I don't walk around naked when I'm on my own because my brain turns into a critical aunt I call Clara. It just goes, She doesn't really say much. It's just the face she makes. It's an eyebrow raise. It's like, could be different, couldn't it?
Does Clara disapprove of you walking around naked like you think you're someone?
I think it's more that she spots what she perceives as flaws. They're not flaws. They're my
flaws.
Amazing body.
Yeah.
But I distance myself from Clara the same way I would distance myself from an actual critical aunt. But it's still annoying if they're in the room and you just want to shut it up. So if I put my clothes on, she goes away.
I write books for teenagers. And I gave a school talk at the Royal School of Ballet. And they were lovely. But I was saying to them, like, whenever you think about being mean to yourself, think, would I say that to a friend? I would never be as mean to a friend as I am to myself. And they were like, that is so true. And I left them and I was all inspiring and I sat on the train and I saw myself in the mirror and I was like, fuck me, I look awful.
Live from the BFI in London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Nat Nassima, and very special guest Yasmin Akram, talking about dangerous women on screen. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. Have you had a good week, Nat?
I've had a brilliant week, thank you, Deb, yes.
Have you had a guilty week or a feminist week?
No, actually, quite a guilty week, if I'm honest, I think.
We love it when you're honest.
I had a bit of good news. Like, I was longlisted for a short story award. Like, ooh. I mean, that's niche, but I care. And I honestly, like, redrafted my tweet saying it three times in case it sounded arrogant and I attracted the ire of someone who swept in and was like, get a grip on yourself.
Yeah. The way that you have to operate, I think, in terms of being proud of your achievements is such a minefield for a woman, because at the heart, society wants women to be demure and understated. And so there's a little bit of us that goes, if I say this, like a bloke would go, honoured to be nominated or something.
Chuffed. I say surprised every time. How bloody surprised can I be? I wrote it. I entered the competition. I mean, oh my God, how did this happen? You made it happen. So that's how that
happened. You asked for it specifically. Yeah. You wrote in, dear people who give awards, give me one.
I would like this one.
And then they did. Then you went, I can't even think how this has happened.
Shocked.
This is crazy town. What? Me? 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 I mean, that's how we have to do it, really.
Basically. That's
yeah,
exactly
we have to go. I fainted this morning to be in the company of these other people. And
everyone's
I don't,
so much better than me.
I don't deserve it. Mm. That's why I need to tell you about it almost. I'm announcing, I'm giving it back. So you've been nominated, you've been shortlisted.
Longlisted. They don't usually announce it, so I've got to go through all the emotional rigmarole of a shortlist and then, you know.
Well, we're behind you. Is it a panel vote? Or a public vote?
Panel vote.
It's a panel vote.
Yeah.
Oh, I think panel votes are so much better because public votes are now just who's got the most followers. Mm. I don't do public vote ones anymore because I'm just like, otherwise you have to be on. I don't really like going on Twitter and going, can you vote for me, please? And then I think if you don't do that, then it looks like you've lost when you wouldn't have lost if you just asked your Twitter followers, but you didn't want to do that because you're a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
a terrible paradox.
So panel is best.
I think the panel is best. All right, so dangerous women on screen.
Yes.
How are you feeling about that, Nat? You are a writer, an actor, and a director. Tell us just a little bit about your film credentials in the context of this.
Oh no, my weak point.
Oh, sorry.
Shit.
Yes.
Shit. No,
yes.
No, it's fine.
Praise
no.
yourself publicly.
Praise myself. Oh God. So what did I do? Like a bit about 2014, I wrote and acted in starred. Be confident, Nat, be confident, in a short film that was nominated for a BAFTA.
Ooh.
And then, best makeup. No, it was best short film.
It was best short film.
Best short film.
Best short film.
That's what it was. And then since then, I've made three other short films, and now I'm moving into making features, and I've got four feature films, like all sort of nudging at the bit for, like, money, if you have any.
We will be doing a collection at the end.
Thanks, pal.
And what's the budget of the film, just to be...
Okay.
What's the budget of one film? What,
the cheapest one? 350.
Okay.
350,000, not
right,
350
okay.
pounds.
350,000 divided by, just so that we can get 420. Four. Some people have put more in and some less. Sure.
Sure, sure.
That's 833 pounds each. So, listen, some of us, if we really dug deep, could do that. Others of us would obviously bankrupt ourselves and be found later in the week.
I dedicate the film to you.
Okay, what you will get, apparently, I assumed you would have a stake in the film and get profits, but according to Nat, you will get a dedication. Because film production isn't what it used to be. I was already imagining myself with a large cigar, Nat. Do you think women who direct films are seen as more dangerous propositions than male directors?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. I mean, God, if you see how few actually, like, get let through, and then all you're allowed is, like, one... Not even a mistake, but, like, a film that doesn't do very well, and people are like, oh, shut those floodgates.
Well, I think it's even harder for a woman just to get her first feature. Seems it magnificently hard. I've seen some men with a short that... I mean, it was all right. It didn't really have much of a story. But they did one short. It didn't win anything. It didn't get nominated for anything. It certainly wasn't BAFTA nominated, Nat. And then they get given money for a feature. And you've done how many shorts now?
Four. Not as a director, but I've... but, like, I've been, you know, integral to all of them.
Integral to four shorts.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of time, really, now for someone to dangerously give you a pot of money to make a feature.
Yeah. I think it's time to pull on your brave trousers and give me some money.
Mm. Yeah. The numbers of women in film, it's just extraordinary. Now, did anybody hear about the Trop Festival in Australia? They had a short film fest, and there was film submitted by female filmmakers and male filmmakers, and one in 16 of the finalists were female, and they wanted to up that. So do you know what they did?
It
was a good idea. It was a really good idea.
Oh,
oh yeah. No. Loads of women were entering. They just weren't getting picked.
Blind submission.
Yes.
So they, like that thing with orchestras.
So the judges didn't know if they were female or male. They did it like The Voice. And the judges...
You can guess a bit with The Voice.
The judges... The judges just had to sit and watch the film. I mean, it must have been difficult for them. Blind to the knowledge of who had made this. They must have been sitting there thinking, well, I don't know what to think of it. How can I possibly know what to think of it? I don't know who made it.
Is it bold or is it naïf?
I don't know. Is this funny or is this fatuous? I don't know. And they were so confused that that year it went up to 50-50. Yep. Because unconscious bias is a thing. It really is a thing. So, Nat, you've made some films with some dangerous female leads and women who are sort of doing stuff. And I don't know, what I'm going to suggest is you make films about women who leave the house.
Which is very brave of me because it is much cheaper just to film a film inside your own house.
Yeah. But women who also don't kill the plot. My observation about women in film and television, this is my own personal Bechdel test.
Hit me.
Okay, this is the DF Dubs test. Does the woman try to kill the plot? If you listen to the woman, would there be no story? Because what I see a lot is women on screen going, don't go, you'll put yourself in danger.
Don't cook meth in a van. Oh, sure, it's really entertaining, but
yeah.
The Skylar
effect.
And
that's why, yes, exactly. And that's why women are hated in long-running television shows. And the way that that hate for the character is expressed is by letters threatening violence to the actress who plays the character. Listen, of course there's got to be conflict. And sometimes one character wants to do something and the other one doesn't want them to do it. But I see a massive trend for women as story killers rather than story initiators. And the women try and put the story out like it's a fire. Basically, their role is to come in with a fire hydrant, get a bit of it out, but then, oh my God, it's hit some petrol poured by the man.
Yeah.
And, oh, now there's more story. There's story everywhere. Oh my God.
Entertainment happens despite her best efforts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is true in every sitcom. Like, look at the mum in Everyone Loves Raymond. Look at the mum in every sitcom ever. Okay, think of an exception. I'll tell you an exception. Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, I love Malcolm in the Middle.
She's such a fun killer that she actually creates story by killing fun. She's an extreme example of the fun killer, but she's so good at killing fun. She kills fun in such an amusing fashion. She's so mean when she kills it. She's not just a sort of an annoying low-pitched nag, which is what most women get to be in sitcoms. In a way, she ends up being funnier by fun killing than he can ever be by fun starting. But it still follows the same pattern. Marge Simpson, as wonderful a character as she is, she does kill homies' fun quite a lot.
Yeah. And the trouble is, a lot of the time, like especially as you get older, when that fun-killing character starts, a little bit of you is like, well, it's a good point.
That's true. You hit an age
you do,
where you go,
you do.
No, the children should not be allowed to have a petting zoo inside the living room. She's right.
Yeah.
I don't want to see this plot.
That
because
sad
this plot
day
is...
you watch Mrs. Doubtfire and you're like, well, I'm entirely on her side.
Yes, it's
you
true.
You behave very recklessly.
Yeah, when you suddenly become Sally Fields. We should call that moment in life the fielding, where you suddenly go, shit, I'm Sally Fields. I want what she wants. Yeah.
Please welcome to the stage, Deborah Frances White!
What I'm interested in is why men are so much more likable than women when they're unlikable. It's like men can be awful, but there's still something about them where we go, oh, but he's charming. Oh, but he's charismatic. He's got a likable quality to him. And I think ultimately it's that we expect more from women. Like, if you hear somebody's been killed and it's a man, you go, oh, that's awful, but that sounds about right. Like, if a man is the killer, I mean, I should make that clear. I'll say that again. If you hear a man has killed someone, you say, that's awful, but yeah, that tracks with what we know. If you hear a woman has killed someone, you're like, why? How? How could this evil demon exist in the world? I mean, if it was a man, but even if a woman helps a man do something bad, we hate her more. We're like, how could you? How could you hold the bag while he killed 5 people in a row? You watched the door, you minded the car, you paid for the parking. It's you, really. And she goes to jail and people seriously hate her more. I think it's because women, versus men, what we are really is the good sibling. You know, when your parents go, well, I mean, it'd be one thing if this is your brother, but I expect better from you. That's all women. And I've been thinking about where this comes from, and I think a lot of it comes from the screen. So I was thinking about Trumbo. He was a writer, screenwriter, who fought McCarthy's right-wing censorship in 1950s Hollywood. And he types in the bath, it's eccentric, and he shouts at his daughter when she asks him if he will come and watch her blow out the candles on her cake. And that's because we need to see that this great man is flawed and troubled. And so whenever he shouts at somebody or is absolutely vile to somebody, it's almost a hallmark of his genius. So he's troubled, but he stands up to fascism with screenplays. That's who Trumbo is. Winston Churchill. Did you see Darkest Hour? I mean, quite famously, I probably don't need to fill you in on this one. He's fighting Hitler. And he screams at his secretary violently for not double-spacing a letter. So he's flawed and he's troubled, but he defeats fascism with great speeches. Hannibal Lecter, murderer and cannibal who helps Jodie Foster catch another terrifying male psycho killer who has an innocent woman in a well, assist with homicide with a nice Chianti. That's what he does. So all of those men are somehow held up as these giants in a way that we should aspire to be. They're giants from history. And it's almost like a feature that although he is this important giant who shifts things in history, look at him scream in a woman's face. Because otherwise he'd be too nice. Do you know what I mean? It'd be like, he can't defeat Hitler and be nice to women. That's too much. Then he's not a three-dimensional character. They actually only bring a woman into the room so he can be vile to her and make her cry and run away. And then we go, oh, there was another side to him. I mean, also apart from the incredible racism and colonialism, but we can't get into that because Bisha Kayali's not here and she'd never forgive me. And there's a scene where Lily James comes in and she plays his secretary and she's new and the other secretary's left in tears, so she says, oh, you've got to do certain things. And then he screams at her so much she runs out crying and she runs into Churchill's wife and she goes, oh, it's what he's like. Don't worry, I'll have a word. And then his wife goes in and goes, stop being so horrible to your secretary. And he goes, I'm fighting a war. I've got to defeat Hitler today. I can't do that and be nice to girls. That's genuinely the story. And I'm fascinated by it because I just think if that's a woman, it's basically The Devil Wears Prada. Nobody likes her. She's not the hero of that story. The hero of that story is the younger woman who is pretty and malleable and tries hard and isn't mean to anybody. Because you can't have Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada be the hero of the story, but you can have Churchill be the hero of Darkest Hour. And that's just a double standard. And that seeps into places that are more important where women are on screen, like, for example, elections for President of the United States of America. Because people went on all the time about how unlikable Hillary was. And Hillary herself says, I have a problem with likability. She tells origin stories of why she's so unlikable. She says, oh, but you don't realise how awful it was in the 1960s where, you know, men shouted at me because they thought I was taking their space. Because if I took their space, they'd then get drafted to Vietnam. And men would say to her, you taking a space here means I might die. And so she says, but that's why I'm so unlikable. And she actually sort of says it out loud. She goes, I understand I'm a cold bitch, but I don't mean to be. It's masking hurt. And she actually has to say it out loud. And I just think about that and I go, yeah, I understand. We all collectively understand that Hillary isn't the warmest. Although Trump is the worst in every possible way and everything about him is nauseating and repulsive and we can't understand how anybody could have voted for him ever. I mean, I wouldn't have voted for him if it was who wins that dirty sandwich box under the table. I wouldn't have wanted him to have that. How people vote. He was the most unlikable narcissistic sociopath in the world. But people still say, yeah, but Hillary was unlikable. And we all sort of know what that means collectively. We do understand that Hillary is a bit unlikable. But why don't we like her? They don't mean political things. They don't mean emails in Benghazi when they say that. It's just a sort of sense that she's a bit cold and she's not that... If she were a man, she'd be so likable. She's not likable for a woman, but she's a really likable guy. If Hillary comes onto the stage and she smiles and she moves around the room and she shakes hands and she makes eye contact and people are like, yeah, but she's not actually giving birth to a kitten, is she? And then suckling it live to show her nurturing skills. No, because she wants to be the president. She doesn't want to be your favourite aunt. That's not the fucking gig. And if she did do that, you'd be like, oh, she's a bit of a soft touch. No, we need a president. But whenever a woman walks into rooms, she walks into rooms in a statesperson-like way, and people go, I'm not really sure I like that. And there's a whole thing about, oh, she wears a pantsuit. What's every fucking male president worn ever? That's all they wear is pantsuits. That's their only option, though. I don't understand. But she wore a pantsuit, and it sort of became like a parody thing, to the extent that there's a group called Pantsuit Nation, where people went, oh, I love the pantsuit. It's like, it's literally the only costume men ever wear. She's doing all the boy things really well and more likably than any boy's ever done them. And so, oh, her emails. Yes, she fucked up with an email thing, but then we got to read all the emails and we saw what was in them, and it was mostly asking her staff to print things out because she doesn't like technology. And then some like, could we do anything to help this girl who's written to me from Iraq? And then one with alternative campaign slogans. And she should have had an alternative campaign slogan. Her campaign slogan was awful. The campaign slogan that took off, does anyone remember it? I'm with her. And that is awful because it puts the onus on the electorate to include her. And it should have been, she's with us. Because ultimately, if we all have to say, but I like her, we wouldn't be asked to like a man. It would be assumed we liked a man. I really, really feel that the campaign slogan was the biggest fuck up. And I mean, the reason she lost was obviously widespread corruption and the fact that Russia fixed it. And even then she won the popular vote. They didn't fix it that well, to be honest. But what I'm saying is men are flawed or even horrible, and there's still something likable about them. You still watch Anthony Hopkins' performance in Silence of the Lambs and you go, yeah, there's something a bit compelling about him, even though he eats people. What I'm saying to you is if Katie Hopkins were a man, you'd like her a little bit. Thank you very much.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah Frances White from The Guilty Feminist, interrupting a podcast, listening briefly to tell you that I did Mock the Week this week. If you're British, you know what that is, and you can find it on BBC iPlayer. If you're Australian, I believe it's coming to you this week or next. I am very excited to announce Guilty Feminist necklaces. These are made by Steve Alley and his company Road from Damascus. Steve is a Syrian refugee, and half the proceeds go to his continuing education as his degree was interrupted when the Syrian war broke out, and the other half goes to help his mother's project that helps women who are refugees get a craft. The necklaces read Guilty Feminist. They're beautiful, beautiful crafted silver. And there's another that says Woman in Arabic. You can find those at road-from-damascus.co.uk. And you can order them no matter where you are in the world. This week, we're talking about films, and I'm excited to let you know that my film, Say My Name, that I wrote and have a cameo in, that was produced by a woman and has a powerful woman at the heart, and much like the screwball comedies we reference in this week's episode, is called Say My Name. It has got into the Cardiff International Film Festival, the Liverpool Film Festival, and has won at the London Independent Film Awards Best Feature Film, Best Actor and Best Actress. If you would like to see it at a cinema near you, let distributors know by hashtagging Say My Name Movie and letting us know where you are. People keep asking where my late night satirical show is, next week's news. The idea is, if we don't like this week's news, let's change it for next week's news. If you'd like to see it, at Channel 4 and say hashtag next week's news. When are we going to see it? Felicity Ward is on tour. And I know that you will all want to go and see her because she is absolutely extraordinary. You can find out the dates at felicityward.com. Instagram.com. She starts in Derby on October the 3rd and she ends up in London on December 22nd. And she'll be touring all around the UK. So go and check that out right now and book some tickets. Her show was nominated for the Edinburgh Comedy Award and it is truly amazing. I have a message for you from the Refugee Women's Centre in Dunkirk. Dear Guilty Feminist listeners, the Refugee Women's Centre would like to say a massive thank you for the outpouring of love and support that we have received. When we woke to the news of the warehouse burning down, we were mentally preparing for the worst time. Instead, we have been overwhelmed by the incredible response from Help Refugees, other fantastic NGOs, and the amazingly kind general public. The rally of support meant we could continue our services to our wonderful women and children as normal, so thank you. What will make the biggest difference now is volunteers. Like all the refugee charities working in northern France, we are in desperate need of long-term volunteers to help us through the winter months, as well as any specialists who are happy to give their time for a few days. For example, yoga teachers, self-defense teachers, or English as foreign language teachers. We would love to have you. We have already had some amazing Guilty Feminist listeners join our team, so we would love for more of you to come and bring more light and love to the Women's Centre and the people we support. In love and solidarity, the Women's Refugee Centre. So if you would like to volunteer or send clothes, donations, money, please go to helprefugees.org and let them know what you can do for the Women and Children's Centre in Dunkirk. And finally, we are discussing two films in this current podcast. The short film that Natlat Seema and Yasmin Akram made, if you go to the show notes, you can just download it. You can see it for yourself. It's about 15 minutes long and it's called War Paint. And also there in the show notes, you can see the montage that Tom Zielinski made that started our episode today to really get into the mood. I must warn you that War Paint has a scene of sexual assault. This is a content warning. I must also warn you that later in this episode, we discuss the French feature film Elle, and that film contains rape, and we discuss that. So that's a content warning for anybody who needs one. Thank you very much, and back to the podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Please welcome to the stage our wonderful guest for this evening. She is an actor, writer, comedian who you may have seen on Sherlock or as part of the double act, Ford and Akram, or on our very own Global Pillage. She also recently made a wonderful short film with Natlat Seema. Please welcome to the stage the wonderful Yasmin Akram! Hello, how are you?
I'm good. When you said my name, I went, like I'd won a competition. It's me.
Yes, it is you. You've entered the competition, much like Nat.
Brilliant.
And you've won. I'm very excited. I think we should show your film.
Oh, brilliant.
And then we should have the conversation around that.
Okay.
So we are now going to have a screening of War Paint. If you're listening at home, you can't watch this now, but you will be able to in a few months after it's done the film festivals. Or check out the film festival near you and see if it's in there. Or perhaps ask the film festival coming to your town if they would screen it.
Do that one.
Yeah.
It's called War Paint, and it was written by Yasmin Akram, who's here. It was directed by Nat Natsima, who's here. And it was starring Yasmin Akram, who's here.
Two.
And if you're listening at home, there is a content warning for scenes of sexual violence. All right. Roll the VT. I think it's a really interesting film, and it's certainly dangerous women on screen. The thing that stands out to me is how unapologetically, really unlikable that she is from the beginning, or frightening that she is from the beginning, or unsettling. And I feel it's a metaphor for how the patriarchy gaslights women. So if you're listening at home and you haven't seen it, it's about a young woman. It starts off, she's going to different groups. It could be a sort of support group or a book group. And she's painting a life of herself. So she's beautifully made up. She's very perfectly groomed. And she's telling stories that clearly aren't really true. And one of the stories she's telling that we see is not the case is that her flatmate fancies her. Now, why do men always fall in love with me? And her flatmate's totally ignoring her. He's not at all interested in her. And she is making sort of flirtatious advances that are being knocked back. But the story she's telling is, he's so in love with me. And then one night when he comes home and comes into her room drunk and wants to have sex with her, she doesn't want it then. She doesn't want it like that. She wants him to be romantically interested in her. Mm-hmm. When she resists, he tries to rape her. She deliberately kills him, basically.
Yeah, yes. I mean, she's angry at that point, isn't
yes.
she?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think she's in fear for her life at that point, but I think she's just had fucking enough.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting what you say as well, because when he comes into the room, the reason that she is so afraid of him coming in is because she isn't made up. When she is made up, that's when she's looking for attention because she feels good. But she's got so much self-hatred that to see her in her granny nightdress.
Yeah, and no, it was very important. It's a very unsexy nighty. Like,
yes.
There's this whole allure of sexual, like, sophistication and alluringness. But, like, no.
Yeah, when it's not on her terms as well, like, it just feels... She doesn't understand why he likes her in that moment, or why he's even trying to have sex with her in that moment.
Yes.
Because she's not in the fairy tale of herself. And I think we talked about this an awful lot, but I think one of the most dangerous things that movie and television... Movies.
She's only seen one, don't tell her. Don't tell her there's more.
I think they're all the same, though. movies and television have done to women is that they give us this idea that if we just look right, we'll be loved.
Mm, yeah.
And it's said over and over again, how many movies have we watched where a woman changes a man's life? That's what we're there to do. You know, we give them erections, we change their lives. That's our jobs. And so she is very much this person who believes that. She believes that she has the dress and she's got her face on. Her prince is going to come.
Mm. And so she's playing by the rules.
Exactly. She is totally playing by the rules. And so it's very upsetting to her. That's just the point where she goes, I've had enough. Like it's not like she's 22 as well. She's had a lifetime of these kinds of interactions where she's trying to be, as we say, the demure, perfect, smiley woman. And then it just never works out for her because she needs therapy. Mm. Just not groups, actual therapy.
Yes, you can see the promise of her response if this was to be a feature film, which may it be a feature film?
Yes,
it is.
We've only bloody finished it.
Have you finished the feature
film? Well, she's written the script.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what I call finished.
Yeah, again, does not dabble in the filmmaking process.
No.
The promise of the feature is that the lead character and a sidekick she's kind of corralled in might become revenge killers.
Well, funny enough, that was the initial idea, wasn't
yes.
it? And the script has dog-legged off a little, but I, in a really
Well, don't tell us, because we're definitely
yeah,
see
okay.
that feature.
Yeah, okay. yeah.
But we were talking about those, when you reverse it, it isn't the same. So we're talking about, like, My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yes.
So Julia Roberts' best friend, who for a long time has been in love with her, is now marrying someone else, and she's decided, oh, no, now I realise I'm in love with him, mm. and goes to the wedding to break it up and to stop it and get this man to fall in love with her again.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how interesting it is because she's morally reprehensible throughout. But if that were the man, it would be romantic.
Of course, yes.
At the end of the film, she doesn't manage to win back the love of Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah. Or, who is so bland. The so most bland man in the entire world.
Well, he's the woman in that. Well, he's the woman.
Yeah, exactly.
She's the interesting one. So he's just the sort of fill in your love interest here. And she goes to get him back. She doesn't get him back. And he says no, and he marries the one he wants to marry.
Which is a very young Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah,
fair
of
enough.
Course. Yeah, it's very difficult to compete
with
a very young...
That's the nightmare,
isn't it? Yeah. Who wants to compete with a very young Cameron Diaz? Thank God that day has passed, because she's not very young anymore. I mean... now, obviously...
We can all sleep at night.
Watching it, I remember thinking, if this were a film about a man... Mm. At the end of the film, he would come outside the wedding with a boombox. And of course she would come to him.
Of course.
There's
He'd be the male Julia Roberts. I can't even imagine what that is. That's
charming as shit is what that is.
That's young Clooney. That's what that is.
I was just going to say, exactly. Yeah. It's young Clooney. As imagine a romantic comedy with the young George Clooney where he doesn't get the girl.
I wouldn't even watch it. I've seen that one movie, and it was George Clooney getting the girl. And I never want to see another one.
No,
see
another. That's the one you saw. And you were talking about Elle. Was Elle an inspiration for this film in any way?
We watched it.
We went to go see it together. Yeah. Me and Yaz were the only people in that cinema. And so we were behaving quite badly. And all the way through, at various times, one of us would go to the other, it's very French.
Yeah. Yes. So Elle is a French film.
It's so French.
A woman who is sexually assaulted by a masked man, and then she's trying to work out, she knows it's someone in her world, mm-hmm. she's trying to work out who it is.
She doesn't go to the police. No. Slightly disappointingly, she's given this is spoilers, but again, it's a couple of years old, so you
should have watched
it. Yeah, there you go.
Pause
fingers in your ears.
If you want to watch Elle, pause now, watch Elle and come back to the
She's given this backstory where she doesn't go to the police because her dad was a serial killer, and so she doesn't trust the police and all the rest of it. And actually, I do think it would be a bit more interesting if she simply did not go to the police.
Yeah.
She's Isabel fucking Huppert, and she's not going to go to the police. Mm. And she's like the head of a video games company, so she's in a very tech bro kind of world, and she's just... But yeah, she just makes very idiosyncratic decisions where you're like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
And she's banging her best friend's husband.
Yeah, there was times during it where we were looking at each other going, I hate this. This is a fucking stupid film. I hate it. And then about an hour afterwards, we went... I love that film. Oh my God, it's so great.
Yeah. French films are the opposite of Chinese food. You feel full an hour later. Yeah. You suddenly go, no, that was good.
Yeah.
No, I get it now.
Yeah.
Just.
Because the ending, she wanders off with her best mate, like hand in hand, pally as you like, even though she knows Isabel Huppert has been, you know, boffing her husband.
But she starts playing power games with the men in the world and sort of hitting on one of the ones that she thinks...
She starts sleeping with the guy she thinks raped her.
Yeah. As a power move back, she knows it's not really about sex, that rape is about violence and power and domination. And so she starts to fuck with men in her world to try and dominate back and win this.
Yeah.
That she sees it as a game of violent chess.
And there's something quite liberating.
Win.
It's almost like the worst has happened now.
Yeah.
So it kind of, is she going to get raped again?
Well, it opens with that, doesn't it? That's the first scene
that's
is the rape.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of, and it's very graphic and shocking. But it's weird when you watch something and afterwards you're amazed by it, but when you're watching it and because... It's not a typical movie because every single turn you're going, she's doing that? It felt so unnerving and so unsettling, even though afterwards I really appreciated that it had been made and that it was so wonderful and she's so wonderful in it. But because you don't see women on screen behaving in that way, even as somebody who wants to make films like that, I didn't like it in the moment that I saw it because it was so new.
Yeah, it's a distance from our expectation. As I was saying before about we expect more from women and we don't like... I think we need to see more callous women and fewer nurturing women on screen to adjust
really
to the idea
that not all women are feely touchy all the time. Sometimes women are ruthless. Sometimes women are reckless. Mm. We see that in our life. Mm. But then we sort of hate more the female senior manager who does something to close a deal, or not that we want to encourage people to be ruthless and reckless of any gender, mm-hmm. but there is a disconnect that we hold, and I think storytelling is a lot of it.
Coldness is very interesting. I think a cold female character is one of the hardest types of female character for an audience to really have empathy with, and Isabelle Huppert is cold. And the woman in, like, she doesn't even have a name in War Paint. She is just the woman.
Always, yeah.
And she is cold. And there was definitely a feeling every now and again when we were making it, like, oh, should we just...
Should we warm put her up?
Yeah, throw in just one little scene.
So, yeah, from time to time, because you don't want everyone to hate her. And I think in the feature, she's more fully rounded, and you can kind of... I think it's in the feature, women start off, and when you watch it, you go, ooh, that's not like me. But I think halfway through, you go, the feature. Sorry, this is pointless saying it because you haven't read it. But I read it.
We've got a final draft in a document.
We'll toss around a draft. Yeah. But I think in the feature, about half an hour when you start going, oh, I fucking done that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, she seems very distant to us when you're watching
Just to be clear, Yasmin.
No, nobody's...
No. If you're watching films about women cutting up men and then putting them in a boot, and you're thinking, I've done that.
We've all been there.
That requires a wider conversation.
When you have a spare after. In Dublin.
Do you know what's really interesting, actually? Even in the edit, there were constant decisions to be made about warming her up or keeping her chilly. And the toilet scene in particular, when she's talking to Pima through the door and she's comforting her. So there's a version of that scene where the music is different. It's not that eerie, sliding, weird, like unsettling music. And the shots are closer up on your face. Oof. And you're being kind of, ugh,
no,
it's an absolute nightmare for the listeners. She's a wreck. And you're closer up on her face, and it's kindness. But then if we use more shots that are set further back and you're further away, we don't have much empathy with your character, and you have that sliding music, and now she's not comforting Pima, she's manipulating her. And it's so interesting. There's definitely a version of this film where, like, she has warmer sides.
Yes, yeah.
But that's not really as interesting, is it?
No, and I think also, as well as that, when women watch it, they can, or anybody can watch it and relate to...
Yeah,
men can watch it, it's fine. Will allow your eyes to...
It's about women, though, so will men enjoy it in any way?
No, they won't. Listen, men don't know what's going on with women at all. No. And when they see them on screen, they freak out.
That's why we put the boobs in.
Yeah.
Yes was like, shall I bring them? Shall I leave them at home?
I was like, get the boobs out as much as we can. We'll lose the men.
Excellent decision to put the breasts into the film. Because I think that's
the
at
feature
least
is
something.
Just my breasts.
The producer at one point, I hope you don't mind me telling the story, Yasmin, but it's going to happen.
Oh, well.
The producer is my boyfriend, and he said at one point, he was like, I'm not sure about some costume decisions. Like, she's put her in some very revealing dresses. And I said, Diarmid, that's Yasmin's own dress.
Thank you very
much. Remember it from her birthday party.
I am single, and I go out in dresses that are too tight for me.
They are not too tight. They're showcasing every curve. They're doing a lovely flaunt. But, like, just the thought that Diarmid was like, oh, you know, shoving that shy little flower into a tight dress.
But actually, that sort of sexualizing of women as well, a sexually powerful woman on screen, I was thinking about The Graduate. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's highly sexual. She's in charge of her own sexuality, and she's doing something extremely morally dubious or even just morally open shut
wrong.
Bankrupt. I mean, that film was made in the 60s, but I actually wonder if that film would be made now.
Oh.
Yeah, in some ways we are becoming a little bit more conservative, I think.
I think so, because you look at films, you look at the screwball comedies of the 40s and the 50s, and it's all sort of Katharine Hepburn walking around going, I don't listen to you, I don't take that from you or any man. I'll never take it from you, I'll never take it from you now, and I won't take it from you later. Well, I might take it from you later, but only on my terms. I want that back.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I desperately want that back. These wisecracking
dames. Mae West and, you know, that's the thing. We don't see... I mean, you know, this conversation could go on and on, but we never see women getting to be the funniest person on screen.
But they really were in
the
Scribbles.
Well, like
they really, really were. Do you know something that's interesting? I found out that my great-great-aunt, when I found my biological family, because I didn't know anything about my biological history, I desperately always wanted to come to London and always wanted to perform, and no one else in my family was a performer. And then I found out that my great-grandmother was in London and in vaudeville.
Wow.
And she had a double act with her sister. And when they split up, my great-grandmother became a ballet dancer I did not get that gene. But her sister, my great-great-aunt, became a comedian. And you can see it on all the bills. It sort of says Lucy Coventry, comedian. You know, she's here, she's here. And they do a census every 4 years, and she's always in different theatrical digs with different theatrical people. And every single year, every 4 years, she says she's 23. She wasn't even 23 the first time she said it. Now, I'm a feminist, but that's my age. And so I was like, oh, wow, we have so much in common. We're both 23 forever.
Forevermore.
Please welcome to the stage the wonderful Nana Seymour!
Because we... I'm not used to doing stand-up in spectacles. They're very new, and they're very, very big, and so I can see all of you incredibly well. But I definitely feel like it's given me a lot of faith in my own intelligence that I never had before, even though I've got a slightly Ronnie Corbett-ish sort of nudge the way I push them up. But anyway, spectacles on. Like most noted academics and intellectuals, spectacles, I'm on a constant quest for self-discovery, thoughts about the self, the soul, morality. But I've pretty much cracked it, because I think that if you really want to see your own soul, if you really want to see who you are, look at what you Google when you're drunk. That's you. That's you in all your unvarnished glory, no one looking. I honestly, the morning after a drinking binge, let's call it a binge, I honestly look at my search history with nerves, as if I'm about to discover something about myself that I'm really not going to like. As if one day I'm going to find some really violent, nasty, like, porn or something on there. And I never do. It's always top load of videos. It's not even Dancing in the Moonlight, guys. It's the lesser known ones. Oh, High Flying Bird. Yes, yes! Oh! Get in my veins, you sweet, sweet smack of pop. It's always that. And also, and this might be the most sexist thing I Google, but I do Google it pretty much every time, is that one from Fleet Foxes' hair. That one from Fleet Foxes. I mean, firstly, I'm not sure if foxes should have an apostrophe in that mangled sentence, but I put them in. And secondly, she's the singer, she's the songwriter. Still don't know her name, I just like her hair. Which is so shallow of me. And I wake up with loads and loads of Google images of her hair all over the place. So that's what I find out about myself. I'm quite basic. And that's really upsetting, isn't it? I always think that when you are drunk, that is a real insight. Or when you're really scared. Or if you get road rage. Like, what you yell at someone is such an insight into your personality. And it's so bad. I always go for badly dressed. Badly dressed bitch. Like, oh my goodness. I mean, I suppose I'm glad. I'm glad it's nothing terrible, but also a bit less shallow. Could you be? Could you? A little? No, that's just who I am. I'm so shaky and clammy. I'm at a very difficult age where I think I can drink like I'm in my 20s, but my body says I can't. And I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, I'm seriously ill. Oh God, please call the police. I'm very, very ill. And I woke up in my boyfriend's parents' house as well. And you'd think I would show some decorum. No, I was like, Carmel, I'm very, very ill. She said, yeah, you drank loads of red wine. And I was like, no, it's more than that. You don't understand. You've given birth to 4 children. You don't understand pain, Carmel. Well, 2 of them were twins. So actually, you know, it's just a clusterfuck, that, isn't it? So I'm just sweating pure red. Sorry, everyone, sorry. I think that is really my biggest flaw. My father said the other day, if I have a fault, he said, which is a very contentious beginning to a sentence. If I have a fault, he says, I don't think I could decorate a cake. Thoughtful pause, and he said, but then I've never tried, so I probably could. Wow. Wow, that self-confidence. Where does it come from? Why will it never go? He sold something on eBay the other day, and he didn't think that the woman who bought it would know how to assemble or deassemble the wardrobe, so he painstakingly disassembled it and then put it back together and filmed himself doing that for her. And I know, I mean, would he have done that if it was a man? Probably. If it was a young man. My father only respects, like, people who are exactly his age. Any older and they're doddering. Any younger, they're fools. But the joke's on him, because he was listening to Kiss FM and had some quite sexually aggressive music in the background. So what he'd done was make this woman a very niche music video porn mashup. If you like seeing a man squat and go, ah, and fiddle with joinery, while someone sings, lick my back, lick my neck, lick my pussy and my crack. Well, have I got the video for you? I do think I'm shallow. I think that's it. I think if you've got to look your faults dead in the face, I am a bit shallow. And I must confess, I'll leave you on this. Oh, that's bold. You might just all hate it. And I'd be like, not leaving you on that, am I? Obviously not. When I feel I'm looking old, which train windows are my nemesis, I will go and shoplift a little something. It's very little, and it's from a big store, Deborah. Don't look at me like that. I'm not going into boutiques, am I? Unless they're hipster boutiques. I mean, firstly, because I am very good at shoplifting. It's like, you do it for years as a teenager, and then what, you're just meant to let that skill disappear? I'm sorry, it's who I am. I'm very good at it. It's like mastering pre-drinking, where you're so drunk you don't need to drink anymore, but not so drunk you can't walk through the door of a nightclub. Like, it's finally balanced. And I will go shoplifter thing. And that's white privilege as well, isn't it? Because, like, I do know I'm just, when I've got my little blazer on and my specs on, that no security guard is like, turn out your pockets, please. But if you did, the stuff that's in there. So I'm terribly shallow and I'm very good at bigging myself up. I've been Nat Letsimile, you've been lovely. Goodbye.
Great. So war paint. What did you think of war paint? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Would you like to see it as a feature?
Yeah.
Okay, so please, where do they tweet about it and say they'd like it to be a feature?
Oh, on the internet?
I think just the internet in general. There's no one person. There's no one person we're sort of concentrating
Creative
our
England
efforts
on. Creative England or, you know, BFI
I
or...
I don't think...
You're looking at me and
Okay, hashtag war paint. So if you just hashtag guilty feminist, hashtag war paint,
yeah.
And then you can find anything hashtagged,
yes.
And then send it to someone with money.
Yeah. That's so good. Oh, and if you didn't like it, keep that to yourself.
Shh.
To keep track of everything we're doing, go to Twitter, Instagram, and please rate, review, and subscribe the podcast and give it 5 stars. Do you have anything else quickly you need to plug? Anything you need to tell us about? Short
story? I've got a new book out. It's called Lou Out of Luck. It's bright pink, and it's for teenage girls, but deep down, at heart, we're all teenage girls. So go just grab some copies.
Lou Out of Luck. Amazing.
I've just finished a TV show called The Reluctant Landlord. It's not on for a while, so chill out and then watch it when it's on.
The Reluctant Landlord, great.
You could follow me at Nat Lertzema. It's good content.
Excellent content. Super.
It is good content.
And could you... And if you... If you tweet about this show, if you could hashtag Guilty Feminist Film Club and suggest other films with dangerous women that you love in that you would like to see... Perhaps here at the BFI, and you can at BFI. My Twitter is at Deborah FW. We also are at Guilt Femme Pod. So please copy us into that, and we will see you very soon. A big round of applause for everyone at the BFI. For Tom Selinsky, who made that lovely montage. The wonderful Yasmin Akram. And the excellent Nat Letsimile. I've been Deborah Francis White. Thanks so much. Good night. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Nat Letsimile, and our very special guest Yasmin Akram. Recording engineer was Grundy Lazimbra. Music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Selinsky for The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Tony and Hannah at PPJ Live and everyone at the BFI, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. We've got two things. We've got the dubs. I mean, I can't really call it the dubs test because that sounds a lot like
dubstep.
I was thinking of Lord Alfred Dubs and the dubs agreement.
We're very different people, Deborah.
That's so interesting. I was thinking about the policy of allowing refugees safe passage, as refugee minors safe passage, and the protection of children in international waters. And yeah. You were thinking of dub. Right. Yeah. No.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.